If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai.
How's it? I'm Josh Lee. Just kidding. I'm Jimmy Wong. You are listening to the Command Zone podcast, or maybe you're watching it. This is our 400th episode. Woo!
Pretty crazy. Yeah. Pretty crazy. Almost 7 years old now.
Wow.
Yeah.
At this point, we're almost going to what? We're in middle school?
Second grade?
Nice.
Maybe
nice.
Third? Yeah.
Very exciting. Well, one thing that we haven't actually really covered, and this is for anyone that is jumping into the game right now, is how to actually play the game of Commander. Now, we've talked about this game in a thousand different ways, it seems like, but it has now grown to be the largest and most popular Magic the Gathering format. Wow.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be about how to play Commander, what makes it different, what makes it awesome, why we made 400 episodes about it. It's going to be devoted to learning about the format if you're not familiar with it. There might be some nuggets in there if you already are, but we want to get people up to speed about what Commander is and what the rules are, how it differs from other forms of Magic. And, well, we're not going to waste any time. We're going to go right into the main topic here.
Yep. And if you have a friend that's considering jumping in, or anyone that doesn't know how but is interested, this is the episode to send them. So copy-paste that link and get it on over to them.
Yeah. We do want to say that this is not going to be a video where we teach you how to play Magic.
Right.
We're going to assume that there is already some Magic knowledge there. If you want to learn to play Magic, the best way to do that is to download Magic Arena, which is the digital version of the game. Commander isn't available to be played on Arena, but Commander is a variant of Magic. And so if you understand the fundamentals of like how to cast spells, how attacking and blocking works, then you're going to understand Commander. It's a slight change in rules from the more traditional way to play Magic. It's kind of like, I like to think of it as like ARAM in League of Legends.
Oh yes, all random, all middle.
Yeah.
Can't choose your champion, but you're all playing basically League of Legends, but in a slightly different format.
But if you know how to play regular League, going to ARAM, it's slightly different, but it's not like all your skills transfer, right?
Yeah.
Indoor soccer versus regular soccer is another way to think about it. That's kind of how I like to think of Commander.
Yep. And Commander was invented originally to be a very casual, so not competitive format, because it is multiplayer. We're going to get into all of those details. And of course, there's going to be always an exception to everything we say, almost universally, but we're going to be talking about it, the cases 99% of the time when it's true. Those small exceptions, you'll run into them, but that's not the point of this episode. You can always look at our other episodes on the podcast to sort of dive into those details.
Yeah, you can learn about the little fringe cases later. Don't worry about that stuff too much. We're just going to talk in general in broad terms. All right, let's talk about first what makes Commander so awesome. I think we can quickly go over the main points, mm-hmm. and then we'll go back around and sort of take a deeper look at each one of these things. So, number one, Commander is multiplayer. And that means that normal Magic is usually 1v1, but Commander is actually usually a total of 3 players in a game, or 4 players, or 5 players. 4 is the most common pod, but you'll see some variation of 3 or more players, which is a totally different dynamic than 1v1.
Yeah, and you're, of course, using so many cards throughout the history of Magic that a lot of cards are going to be much worse or better depending on it, because Magic originally was designed to be a one-on-one game, but a lot of cards now these days are designed to be for a multiplayer format.
Yeah, and when there's more players at the table, there's a lot more socializing going on. If you're playing 1v1 and somebody plays a creature, you know that that creature is going to be attacking you because you're the only opponent that they have. If you've got 3 players or 4 players in the game and they play a creature, you can do things like this. Jimmy, who are you going to attack with that creature?
Oh, gosh. Well, you have a blocker, but you're the scariest at the table, so I'm probably going to swing at you, maybe?
But I do have that blocker. Maybe you want to attack Megan instead.
Okay, sure, why not? So that never, ever happens on one-on-one Magic because the game is just to beat one opponent. But when you're at the table with 4 other players, all of a sudden you're socializing, you're using politics and small tips and tricks to sort of get your way around the table and navigate your way to a victory. It's kind of like King of the Hill in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's kind of the board game style of Magic. It uses a lot of the same skills or flexes the same muscles as like playing Among Us or something like that, right?
Right.
Werewolf, something like that. It has that aspect to it. It's really about more about hanging out with your friends than who wins any particular game.
Yeah, this is the real gathering that I think Magic was invented for, but we just didn't realize it back in the day. Because game nights you're playing at your LGS or Command Fest, Commander is always about sitting with multiple people, meeting new people, seeing all kinds of crazy decks and brews, and it being multiplayer lends itself to a slightly more casual format.
All right, the second thing that makes Commander so awesome is the opportunities for unique deck building. So in Commander, each deck has a commander, which is a legendary creature card that that deck always has access to. And this opens up a bunch of like wider variety of strategies than most other formats have. Because if a legendary creature comes out tomorrow, well, you can suddenly build a deck that could never be built before. And there are tons of legendary creatures, tons of different kinds of decks.
Yep. And there's also these partner commanders where you can pair one partner up with another one. You're talking about hundreds of different possibilities. No two decks are ever going to be identical. And as a result, you just have decks that are unique. They feel like it's your expression of how you want to play the game. And each of the decks is going to feel like its own sort of creature slash strategy or play style or whatever you would like.
There are also some interesting deck building restrictions built into the rules of Commander. There's something called color identity, which we'll talk about later, but it kind of restricts the colors you're allowed to use depending on what your legendary creature your commander is. It's a singleton format, which means you cannot have any duplicates of the same cards in your deck besides basic lands, and that creates a higher variance and sort of a more unpredictable outcome or a more unpredictable play style than 1v1, where 1v1 you get four copies of everything. The decks are smaller. A lot of times the games will kind of play out the same way. It's not that way in Commander.
Yeah, and you actually build your decks in 1v1 in the competitive formats to play out the same way each time because you want that consistency. But Commander's fun. You get to choose from all these cards, and sometimes one card you'll play will be completely different but have the same effect as another one. But that creates the variance. It creates a lot of that sort of like interesting dynamic of only having one of each card.
Yeah, no two games are the same
ever.
Another reason why Commander is so awesome is the games are longer. So games can be longer for three reasons, two of which we've already talked about. Multiplayer, there's just more players in a game, so it would make sense that it takes more time to knock out two players than it does one other player.
Yep, more turns.
The singleton aspect does create longer games just because decks are less consistent, there's more variety, there's more variance, and therefore it's less likely that you're just going to do step one, two, three, and win like you can with in the other formats sometimes. And the last thing is that in Commander, everybody begins with 40 life.
Instead of 20. So that's double the normal life total. Again, it makes sense with there's more than two players. If there's four players, everyone has 40 life. 20 life, the games would just end very quickly. And so what happens is that a lot of cards that you would never play in competitive formats, cards that cost a ton of mana or are slow and clunky, actually have a perfect home in this format because you can have that a moment, that chance to play that spell that's huge and really powerful and actually have it work. Can go through, whereas in a very competitive, faster format, you might die before that thing even gets the chance to swing or do its job.
Yeah, they say that in competitive formats, like if you have a 7-mana spell in your hand, very good chance that the game never even gets to the point where you have the amount of mana to cast that spell. In Commander, because of the more life and all the other reasons, good chance you're going to get up to that amount of mana, be able to do some things once you get there. So
yeah,
it does open the door to sort of the bigger, splashier spells or, you know, the riskier, wilder strategies,
yeah,
you know, more unique situations.
With more time, if you're in a car, you can press the gas a little harder and you can go faster than you otherwise would. But if the course ends halfway through, then you're not going to get that speed. So Commander being longer, having that bigger spell is splashier, it's just much more realistic.
All right, the fourth reason why Commander is so awesome is there is a huge card pool. In fact,
20,000 plus cards.
Yeah, almost all cards that have ever been printed for Magic are legal. Silver bordered cards are not. They're a little bit of a special situation.
Power 9, sort of Magic's oldest, most powerful cards. But yeah, for the most part, I'd say 99% of cards you can play in this format.
Yeah, if you own it, if it's in a box in your closet, if you've dusted it off for the first time after 15 years, 99.9% of the cards in that box are going to be legal in this format. And they will continue to be legal in the format, you know, forever. Basically, there is no rotation or any other outside mechanic or rule that's going to suddenly cause a large swath of cards to not be legal in the format anymore, which does happen in things like Standard and stuff like that.
And what's really cool, amazingly, with all these cards, there's actually a very short ban list. So cards that you cannot play outside of, and this is specific to Commander. And bans actually these days happen very infrequently and very rarely. The format is sort of wide open in a lot of different ways. And ends up being a sort of self-regulatory. You don't need to just ban stuff left and right because it's a little too powerful, because you have access to every card in Magic that also sort of polices itself.
Yeah, it's one of the worst feel-bads is when you're playing Modern or Legacy or Standard or something, and either it rotates or they ban a card, and they don't even have to ban the card that you have, but a card from your deck, which suddenly makes your deck not work anymore, and now all the cards in there are kind of, they're not technically banned, but they're not useful anymore. That just doesn't happen in Commander. Over the last, like, 4 to 5 years, we've only had, like, 4 or 5 cards banned, and they even unbanned some cards. So, actually, they've only, like, netted maybe 3 cards total banned more than there were 5 years ago. They're just very, I like that about the format. You have a card, you're going to be able to play it.
Yeah, and because you have a giant card pool, you are just able to play different strategies and make a ton of different things more viable than you were before. Again, the multiplayer format, you have more time, you have more cards to choose from. Things that you would literally never be able to do in one-on-one in Standard or Legacy or whatever are now sort of open to you in Commander. The door is kicked wide open and you have access to all this stuff. You can kind of do whatever you want.
Another reason you can kind of do whatever you want is the fifth reason why Commander is so awesome. And it's because it's casual. It's not a tournament format. Not that no LGSs will run tournaments for it, but it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Usually you're playing for no stakes. Nothing's on the line. You're just
except
playing
your pride.
With friends or people you know, right? A little bit of pride. And the social dynamics and the politics don't tend to lend themselves super well to tournament structure where you could, like, team up against somebody and, like, that might feel bad. Commander's not the best format for, like, finding out who the best Magic player is, right? Like,
yeah, you won't actually find a lot of hyper-competitive players enjoying Commander that much because they don't like the fact that you can just tell someone to attack them and they'll do it, right? They don't have full control of the situation. So it's kind of hard to actually determine, I am the best, because so many different things can happen in the course of a game. Someone like me might join the table and just add an element of chaos that wasn't there before that totally throws that equation out the window.
Or Jimmy and I could sit down and just know that this person, you know, Glenn's sitting there and he's the best player, clearly, and Jimmy and I just look at each other and go, well, we better kill him first and take him out. That's definitely happened, Glenn. Sorry. So as a result of the fact that it's casual, players are often, they know it's casual, right, going in, and they're prioritizing things when they build their decks and when they play beyond just winning, right?
Yeah.
If you sit down in a game of limited or one-on-one, you're trying to beat the other player, and that's your main goal. In Commander, it's not always the case. A lot of times, you'll just do something because you think it's funny or cool. It's going to lead to a funny story. It's going to be epic. I don't know how this is going to end up. We do this all the time on game nights. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm going to do it, though, because it's going to be crazy. And people will prioritize things that aren't winning.
Yeah, and especially if you're playing with a group of friends, people that have known each other for a long time, you open the door for a lot more of those possibilities where it's just like, well, this was really interesting the last time it happened, and I have a grudge against this person, so I'm just going to do this for the heck of it and see what happens. And you end up making these crazy moments, really fun, relatable, insane stories to tell people over time. And that's one of the things I find that is often a huge conversation point when talking about Commander, is what happened in another game that was so unique and interesting that you just have to share it.
I do want to note that there is something called competitive Commander, CEDH. It does exist, but they are a small part of the population. Most people would say that the format is casual, right? Like 90% of people, I think, would say that.
Yeah.
I'm just making up a number, but I feel like it's something like that.
It's also what makes the game so awesome, is that we're not here specifically. Now, it's not to say that if you want to be that person that just wants to win, there's definitely a space for you in the format as well. But for the majority of it, the big majority, we're playing for casual, we're playing for fun.
Yep. All right, and the sixth and final reason we're going to list off that Commander is awesome is because it's popular. This didn't used to be the reason when we started.
No.
7 or 8 years ago. 7 years ago. But
Limited
now,
used to be the most popular, and then Commander quickly overtook it, which is crazy.
Yeah, so now this has become the most popular way to play Magic. And why that's good is because you can find games. If you build a Commander deck, you're going to be able to walk into a place where people are playing Magic, and guaranteed somebody in that place is going to play Commander. You will be able to play your deck against them.
Yeah, not to mention, because it's so popular and it's so casual, you can actually build a deck for really cheap if you're looking for budget options. Whereas if you're trying to play a Modern deck against someone else, well, in that case, them just having a more expensive deck might mean they're just better than you in that sort of that deck build. So it's really popular, and the fact that you can have access to pre-con Commander decks that you can upgrade for just a couple of $20 or whatever, make them, you know, competitive enough to play at the table, means that you can find games anywhere. You can walk into anywhere and say, who's got the Commander deck? And you'll see a ton of hands shoot up, and you'll be ready to go.
Also, your LGS, there's definitely going to be people to play, and big Magic events. Hopefully those will come back after the pandemic here.
They actually launched a Command Fest specifically for Commander, and it ended up being super popular right before the pandemic hit, so I think those are definitely coming back.
Right, so there are big events where you'll be able to play.
Yep.
All right, so that was a good little overview of Commander, why it's awesome. Let's get into the nitty-gritty here of how Commander really works. We should start with the namesake, the Commander.
The one and only. The or card, two and only sometimes.
The two and only. So the biggest difference between Commander and other ways to play Magic is that each deck is led by a Commander card. So just like you might have like your favorite fighter in Street Fighter or your favorite champion in League of Legends or class in Destiny, Commander lets you play in a way that expresses your interest, your style, the things about Magic that you love, because you just choose a legendary creature that encapsulates that, build around that.
Yeah, and at this point in the game, there are definitely enough legendary creatures that pretty much, if you told me, hey, I like doing X, Y, and Z, I could find you a card that matches that really well, or a combination of partners that does that. So let's take a legendary creature, one that was just recently released, Ozgear the Reconstructor.
Yep.
This is a red-white commander. It loves bringing artifacts back, getting synergies from the graveyard and enter the battlefield effects, and it's pretty powerful. So the way that your commander works is that it's not a part of your deck. You don't shuffle it into your deck every game. It actually begins in a special area called the command zone. Typically, players put this above their deck when they're playing, but it can really be anywhere. Just make sure that people understand that that's their command zone, and that's where your commander begins the game.
Yeah, so at the start of the game, you draw seven cards, but your commander's also sitting there in the command zone, and you can cast it out of the command zone anytime you want by paying its casting cost. It's basically the same as it being in your opening hand. Not the exact same, though. If somebody wanted you to discard cards or something, it's not in your hand, so you couldn't discard it.
Yep, and you have to abide all normal rules for casting it. If it's a creature, sorcery speed only, unless you have flash, etc.
Yep, and it's almost always a creature, but not always.
Yeah.
And then the great thing about the commander is, we're going to say this many times throughout the episode, quote unquote, you always have access to it. And what we mean by that is it's very difficult, nearly impossible for your opponents to make it so that your commander's gone and you can no longer cast it. Because when your commander gets removed, whether it is killed and it goes to the graveyard, exiled, bounced to your hand, shuffled into your library, any of that stuff, instead of doing that, if it's your commander that happens to, you can choose to put it back into the command zone. And therefore, you can now cast it out of the command zone again. The only rule to keep in mind is that for every time you've cast your commander out of the command zone in a given game, you have to pay an additional 2 mana. We call this commander tax. So let's say I play my Ozgear, Jimmy removes it,
blah.
I put it back in the command zone. The next time I cast it, I have to pay an additional 2 mana. So now I believe it's going to cost 6 mana. And then if it got removed or died again, I could put it back in the command zone. But the next time I have to pay an additional 4 mana because it was 2 plus 2 more for this most recent time it died. So it'll be 8 mana. Then it'll be 10. Then it'll be 12 and so on and so forth. So it does become more difficult to cast your commander as the game goes on. It dies a lot. But it does mean that, like, it's very difficult for your opponent to just fully shut off your strategy by being like, you never have access to your commander.
Yeah, and that didn't always used to be the case before there was a way for you to shuffle commander into a deck. And so obviously the rules committee looked at it and went, you know what? The point of this game is to have access to this card. So that you will always have. The main thing you have to worry about is if it gets removed too many times, and then you just have to pay more and more mana. At a certain point, it becomes untenable.
Yeah, when it's 25 mana to cast your commander, which I've never actually seen, then it can be like virtually you can't cast it. But by that point, the game's probably over. That's a long game. But as a result of the fact that you always have access to your commander, decks will often be built around the special abilities and the powers of their commander. It'll be central to the strategy of the deck because it's safe for a deck builder to do that since you always have access to it.
Yep, and just knowing that when you draw your card of seven hands and all the cards in your deck are going to synergize with your commander in some way, that makes sense. Otherwise, if you went, okay, well, I can only cast this once. Well, how do I build a deck around this card? Now that you always have access to it, you can build your deck around it. Everything synergizes much more nicely. So there's lots of different ways that you can express your personality and play style. There are ways to do it in tribal ways. I want to just build only vampires, so I'm going to play this card called Edgar Markov. I want to build the coolest, biggest value engine ever, so you can play a different commander that abides sort of in that world. Maybe you're a combo player, you want to end everything in one big turn, or you want to just throw out so many tiny little tokens that your Tristani is going to make them huge, and then you're going to kill your opponents with one big swing.
Yeah, whatever strategy you want to go with, there's going to be multiple commanders to choose from to pull off that strategy for the most part.
Yep.
One of the real big strengths of the format is, and why it's named after it, is the commander. We wanted to talk about some quick examples of our own decks, Jimmy. What's a commander that you personally play and love, and how did you build your deck for it.
Yeah, so I have a commander called Marchesa. Marchesa allows creatures to come back to the battlefield if they have a +1/+1 counter on it, and you can get those counters by attacking players with higher life totals. So this deck, there's lots of different ways to build it, but the one that I love the most, something I grew up playing and loving, is stealing other people's creatures. So if I steal your creature, manage to get a +1/+1 counter on it and get rid of that creature, then it comes back under my control. So that's sort of a somewhat control-y board that likes to play with other people's stuff and swing and kill them with their own things. And that, to me, is a great way to do it, and Marchesa is an awesome commander to build around that.
Yeah, I wanted to do a counterpoint for my favorite deck, which is a deck that's not built around the commander, because you do not have to build your deck around the commander, correct, although I'd say most decks are that way. I have a deck, I call it the Tim deck. It's based around a card called Prodigal Sorcerer, which taps to deal one damage to anything. And the whole theme of the deck is just creatures that tap to do stuff and synergizing with the tap abilities on creatures.
And what commander do you have for that deck?
It is Kaidel and Ludovich, which are partners, but they don't actually synergize directly with the deck as far as helping creatures tap or anything like that.
Yeah, but Kaidel does have a tapping ability. Yeah. So Josh, it's interesting, and lots of players do this as well, which is like there's a central idea that the deck is built around that doesn't necessarily need your commander to function, but the cards in there may be sort of like part of the synergy, but they don't lead it in the same way.
Yeah, but I think this just is emblematic of the fact that Commander really does let you do anything. Even if there's not a legendary creature that does exactly what you want to do, you can probably still pull off your strategy with something else. So.
Yeah, some players will just have a random five-color commander just so they can play all the colors.
Yep.
Okay, so, I mean, one of the things I love about Commander 2 is that when you sit down at the table, the first thing that you find out is who everyone's going to be playing as Commander. And that, for me, is something to get excited about, because you can ask, ooh, interesting, oh, that person's playing that, and they're doing that, this is what I'm going to have to look out for, or I have no idea what Josh is doing over there, I can't wait to see it. So there's a lot of excitement that comes into that, sort of like, what are you going to do, and how are you going to play against the other people at the table, because, again, no game is going to be alike.
All right, let's talk about some of the unique deck building rules that Commander has. The first thing is that it is a singleton format. And what this means is that Commander decks are 100 card singleton decks. So there's going to be 100 cards in your deck. Note, that 100 number does count your commander or commanders. So you'll actually have 99 cards in your deck plus your commander in the command zone. Or if you have partner commanders, you'll have 98 cards in your deck plus two commanders in the command zone. But when we say singleton, what that means is that no cards in your deck can be duplicates of other cards in your deck. So you can only have one of any given card in your deck except for basic lands. Basic lands, you can have as many mountains,
swamps,
islands, forests. You probably want forests because it's pretty good. You can have a lot. You can have as many basic lands of the same type as you want. But any other card, if the card has a name that's not a basic land, then you can only have one of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if this card was printed in this set, but the same card was reprinted in another one. Nope, those are the identical same card, so you can't have multiples of it. Now, of course, there are some exceptions, and there are a lot of decks that are actually built around this, and they'll typically say so right on the text of the card. So if you look at a card like Persistent Petitioners, at the very bottom it says, a deck can have any number of cards named Persistent Petitioners. This, because it's printed on the card, this overrides the rule of Commander, and that typically is the case. If it's written on the card, then in that case, the card's rule, sort of, that's what goes. Same goes for a card called Dragon's Approach, which just came out in a set called Strixhaven, and then a Shadowborn Apostle, which is the exact same thing. Again, the deck can have any number of cards named Shadowborn Apostle.
There are only like about half a dozen cards that this matters for, but when you run to that deck, you'll know, because they'll have 30 of that card in it. But for the most part, 99.9% of the time, everyone's only got one copy of any card you see them play. So if they play something, that's it. They're not going to have a second copy of that in their deck. And also, you can't put two copies of the same card in your deck.
Now, a lot of people might say, wait, only one of each card? This feels like a downside. I want to have four lightning bolts in my deck because that card is just awesome. But it actually, I think, adds to the fun, because it allows, again, and it forces players to sort of choose cards that are unique and specific to their strategy, but it also forces them to reach out and try a little bit something different, because a lot of times someone's going to go, wait a minute, I've never seen that card before. And that's something that I think happens at least once in most Commander games that I'm in, and that's a fun thing for me.
Yeah, I like the singleton because it adds to the variance, so that when you've got that many different cards in your deck, it's really hard for the deck to play out in the same way every time.
Yeah.
Where in a 60 card deck with four of everything, you can really only have like six or seven different cards in your deck. You just got four of everything, right? That's not like that in the Commander. Also, it leads to sort of just less optimization in general. And that means more off-the-wall cards can be played, more different situations can come up. You can do stuff that nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah.
And that is something that happens, you're right, I think, in every single Commander game where somebody is like, wait, that's a card? Where's that from? Where'd you find that? In a good way, right? Of like, holy crap, I need to put that in this deck of mine or something like that.
Yeah, our friend always takes a picture of every card that he finds interesting.
And he's been playing Commander for like, since the beginning. And more he still will find cards that like he's never seen. I think that's something people are worried about, right? It's like, I won't know the cards or whatever. Trust me, Jimmy and I, we've dedicated a large portion of our lives to talking about this game and playing Commander all the time for years and years and years, 400 episodes of this podcast.
Oh yeah.
Jimmy, don't you still read cards like every single game?
Every single game. And even cards that I've seen played 20 times. Because I'll be like, I need to know exactly what it says.
Does it say May?
May, yeah. Does it, like, and then sometimes you realize, oh my gosh, that actually says, it doesn't say May. You have to do that ability or whatever it is. But that's a fun part of it. Because it feels like you're digging into a treasure box. And every single time you pull something out, it's like, oh, that's so beautiful. I'll put it aside.
Yep.
You see, but then you look at it again, like, wait a minute. There's a gem on this that I've never noticed before. I also think part of the fun of Singleton is that because the cards are different, they're not always going to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But that means that in a certain situation, you're going to have to be like, okay, because this card isn't the same as the other one I thought I could use in this situation. How do I have to use this one just a little differently to get me out of this, you know, whatever bad situation or whatever you're doing?
Yeah. Instead of four lightning bolts, you have to go lightning bolt, now chain lightning, something else similar, yeah. Right? And you're like, okay, chain lightning. Well, crap. Okay.
Can't target someone else that has red.
Exactly.
Then
all of a sudden I have to play slightly differently. So yeah, I love that about it. All right. Next up, we're talking about one of the most unique and complex things about Commander. Don't worry, though. We're going to break it down for you so that it's easy to understand. But first, we're going to take a really quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Okay, we are back and we are teaching you how to play Commander in a broad sense. We're not teaching you how to play Magic. Hopefully you already know how to do that. If you don't, like we said before, go download Arena. It's free. You can play and learn immediately and get all the basics down.
Links are in the show notes.
We're going to talk about something a bit complex, maybe the most commonly asked questions about Commander, because this is one that relates to every single deck, and that is the issue, not issue, that is the topic of color identity.
Yeah, this one gets a little complicated. Just stick with us here. We're going to walk you through it. The broad rule is that you can only play cards in your deck that are either colorless or they match the color identity. Remember those words, color identity of your commander. So the idea of color identity is actually unique to the commander format and is separate from the actual color of the card. And this is where I think some of the confusion comes in.
Yep.
So let's look at the card. It's a legendary creature, so it could be your commander, Samet, Voice of Dissent.
Okay, so this card reads, it costs 3, a red, and a green. It's a 3/4 legendary creature human warrior. It has flash, double strike, vigilance, and haste. It says other creatures you control have haste. And then the most important line of text for what we're about to talk about, it says one white mana, tap this creature, untap another target creature.
Okay, so the color of the card, not the color identity, the color of Samut is red and green. And the way that you determine the color of a card usually is you just look in the top right corner and you look at the casting cost. She's three red and a green, so her colors are red and green. This isn't always the case. I want to mention there are exceptions. Mm-hmm. So like Rogue Rock, Son of Rogra, is a new card that has a zero casting cost. So it doesn't cost any mana in the top right corner. So you don't look at any mana symbol up there and say Rogue Rock is red. But Rogue Rock is a red card.
Yeah. This is maybe the only case in, I think, the current slate of cards where this is the case. Fortunately, Rogue Rock's entire card frame is red, so you understand it. But generally, like Josh said, just look at the top right, and any of those colors there are going to determine the color of the card, but not the color identity necessarily.
Right. And also some flip cards have different colors on the other side and things like that. So there are some cases, but I would encourage you not to worry about fringe case scenarios for now. You can learn those as you go along.
Yep. Or look it up online.
Yeah. But for the most part, top right corner, whatever the casting cost is, that's the color of the card. So according to the rules of Magic, Samut is a red and green card. She's both. For instance, if you had the card Hydro Blast, which allows you to either destroy a spell if it's red, or sorry, counter a spell if it's red, or destroy a permanent if it's red, you could target Samut with Hydro Blast because it is a red card.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk about color. Remember, that's color. That's not color identity. Now we're going to talk about color identity, which is the unique concept in Commander.
Okay, so let's take a look at Samut again. The color identity is any of the mana symbols at the top right and then any of the mana symbols in the rules text. So right. In this case, Samut's color is red and green, but her color identity is red, green, and white.
Right, because she has that activated ability, which adds a white mana symbol in her rules text. So that means if you build a deck based around Samut, you can only play cards that are either red, green, or white.
Or a combination of those.
Right, it could be a green-white card.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot play cards that are outside of Samut's color identity. So, for instance, Demonic Tutor is a mono-black card. There's no black in Samut's cost. You can't play that card in the deck. It's not legal. You can't play Rhystic Study in a Samut deck either.
Yep. Lands as well, even though, you know, it may not seem this way, but they have mana symbols. So you can't play a Swamp or an Overgrown Tomb because those tap for colors that are outside of Samut's color identity, and it's right there in the text as well.
Yeah, that black mana symbol in the text on the lands means Samut's like, no, you can't play that because I can't have any mana symbols on stuff that is outside of my colors. You also can't play cards with only a partial identity overlap with Samut. So like Assassin's Trophy is a removal spell in green and black. It shares green with Samut, but because it has that black mana symbol, it cannot go in the deck. It cannot go in a Samut deck. You have to be every mana symbol on your card has to be available on Samut. Otherwise, you can't run it.
Yep. However, you know, colorless and artifact cards, these are cards that can go into every deck, but they also still need to abide by the same rules of matching color identity. So Sol Ring, which is an artifact that just taps for two colorless mana, is fine, but Is It Signet is not. Similar to an Overgrown Tomb, it has color symbols in there that don't match Samut's color identity, so you can't use it.
Right. So I know that trips people up. An artifact is a colorless card. It has no color. That means Hydro Blast couldn't target.
Right.
Right? But it still has color identity if it has mana symbols on it. Is It Signet's a great one because it has that blue mana symbol. Can't go in Samut.
Sorry.
Note, this only changes Samut's color identity. This does not change the color of Samut as a card. So in Commander, let's imagine you had a Jimmy, you're playing Samut. You have it out. And I have a card called Western Paladin, which is a creature that you can pay black to tap it and destroy target white creature.
Aha. Well, then can you target my Samut because Samut's color identity is red, green, and white?
I cannot because Samut is still, according to the rules of color, a green and red card, not a white card.
Right.
So I can't target it as if it were a white card. It only sort of applies to the color identity parts of the rule, which is mostly for deck building.
Yep. So color identity, again, it's every single mana symbol that you're finding color-wise in the top right and then in the text of the card. That is specifically for if it's a legendary creature in your deck, can that card fit into, what cards can fit into your deck? And the same goes if you had a card that had a red mana on the top and the white mana symbol in the text box, then that could fit into the Samut deck, but it couldn't fit into a deck that's mono red because it has that extra symbol in there. It's a little complicated, but trust me, once you sort of figure it out and get an idea for it and just look at a couple of cards, you'll understand very quickly.
All right, there are a couple of edge case scenarios we should discuss here just because they do come up often enough, I think. And one is hybrid mana and color identity. It's worth noting that hybrid mana symbols, as they apply to color identity, they count as both.
Yep.
So Deathrite Shaman has a hybrid green-black symbol in its top right corner. That couldn't go in the Samet deck. It's kind of like Assassin's Trophy in that way.
Yep.
It counts as both a green and a black card, so it doesn't... Samet doesn't have black, can't have that card.
Yep, and Murderous Redcap, similar thing. It has black and red in its cost. And this just means that you can pay either black or red, but as a result, the color identity of that card is both. Yep.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about color or land words and color identity. So
more soup to throw at you, sorry.
Yeah, this does trip people up, though. So just because a card references the word blue or white in its rules text does not make that card that color identity. So again, if we look at that Western Paladin we talked about before, black, tap it, destroy a white creature, that's still, Western Paladin is still a mono black card. Just because it says the word white down there doesn't make its color identity white. If it had a white mana symbol, it would. But because it says the word white, that doesn't count.
Yep. And then there are other cards that will create things that are in other colors, but that doesn't change the color identity of the card. So Illuminate History is a 2 red spell that basically you discard some cards, draw cards, and then you create a 3/2 red and white spirit creature token. So this is still a mono red card, even though at the end of it, it pops out a red and white creature token who would be considered a red and white creature. That doesn't actually change the identity of the card itself.
Yeah, and you're okay to run Illuminate History in a mono red deck, even though it does create a spirit that is white. The deck kind of only cares when deck building. And then once you're playing, it's like, I don't care. If something creates something that happens to be blue, that's fine, as long as there was no blue mana symbols anywhere on that card.
Yep.
It works similarly for land type words that show up in the rules text of a card. So if something just says the word island, that doesn't affect the color identity of a card. This is mostly applicable to fetch lands.
Yep. So these are lands that you sacrifice them to find a specific land in your deck and get it onto the battlefield. It can help you make sure all your mana is there. So a card like Flooded Strand says, tap it, pay a life, sacrifice it, search your library for a plains or island card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. So even though it says plains and island on it, you can put this card in your Samet deck because it doesn't have those mana symbols in the text. It just says plains or island. So you would use this to find a plains card in the Samet deck.
Yeah, the good thing about these is you could find something that's like a plain / mountain, right?
Yeah.
You could find...
Yeah, it's the red white one. You know, Sacred Foundry.
Yeah, all right,
oh my gosh. Almost had a heart attack.
But fetch lands are colorless, so they can go in any deck. And actually, technically, this wouldn't be smart, but you could put them in any deck. So even if there wasn't islands or plains in a deck, you could put Flooded Strand in there. Maybe you just want a sacrifice theme or something like that.
Yeah,
even though there's literally no land in your deck that it could go find.
Yeah.
Because they don't have an inherent color identity, because if you look at Flooded Strand, there's no mana symbol on that thing.
Just a lot of text.
They've wanted to change this rule, and a lot of people, when they hear it for the first time, are like, that's dumb. That doesn't make sense. Why don't they just make it so that when it says the land word, it is that color? It's because it would change the way cards that have like Forest Walk would work, right? Like if you're a red card that has Forest Walk, do you want that to be a red and green card for color identity? No, you want it to stay mono red. Also, think about a card like Karma, which deals damage to each player based on the number of swamps they control.
Oh yeah, makes a lot of things a little more complicated.
Yeah.
So it's nice to just understand if it's in text, it does not denote a color, but if it shows the literal mana symbol, then it does denote that color.
Right. Okay. Let's just talk about some examples or put them on screen here so that we can let everybody out there kind of figure out what color identity of these things are.
Pop quiz, hot shot. All right. What?
Shoot the hostage. I got that quote.
I know. I love it. Okay. So first up, we have Aili, Eternal Pilgrim. So if you look at this card, it's got an activated ability, but it also has mana cost at the top right. We'll give you a couple of seconds. Ask yourselves, do you know what color identity this card is? This is for your video viewers.
Yep.
It's
pretty straightforward because the activated ability in the text is the same colors as Aili's colors. So this card is, for color identity purposes, and the color of the card is black and white.
Very simple. All right. Next up, we have Tassiker, the Golden Fang.
This one's a little tougher.
This one's a little tougher. Can you identify what the identity of this card is? Now, it costs 5 and a black up top. So we know for a fact that this is a black card. as far as that goes. But the color identity, well, you got to look at the activatability. It's got a green and blue hybrid mana cost, and it's going to count for both. So this card is black, blue, and green when it comes to color identity. You can put any of those colors in your deck when building it.
Yep, it's a Sultai deck.
Sultai.
All right, the next example is a partner pairing. It's Braylon and Shabraz. So Braylon is mono red and only has mono red stuff going on. And then Shabraz is blue and white and does have an activated ability, but it is also a hybrid blue and white. So with partners, you would combine what they both can do together since they both sit in your command zone to start the game. Mm-hmm. And this is what we call a Jeskai deck, which is a red, white, and blue color identity.
Yep. And Shabraz is a white and blue card, and Braylon is a red card. But together, they make white, blue, and red. The American
Let's go to the last one, which is an interesting one. I like this as an example.
It's Golos, Tireless Pilgrim. So it's got five mana, just five generic mana as its casting cost, and it's got a very interesting activated ability that costs two white, blue, red, black, and green. So what is the color identity of this card when you're building it?
If you said all five colors, Wooburg, you are correct.
Ding,
while
ding,
Golos
ding.
Himself, or itself, is a colorless card,
yep.
Its color identity is all five colors because it has that activated ability and its cost. So if you build a Golos deck, you can put cards of any color in the deck. Basically, you can play with all the cards
that are legal in Commander.
Yeah.
Very nice. Ah.
All right. That kind of covers deck building there. The fact that there is singleton, how color identity works, building around your commander. This was just us covering those rules. If you want advice on how to actually like make the best choices to build an awesome commander deck, check out a video we did fairly recently called The New Commander Deck Building Template. There'll be links in the show notes that kind of goes over like good ratios and what types of cards you're looking for and how to build synergies and things like that. We'll also link a bunch of other episodes in this show notes for this particular episode that are just good general deck building tips. We're not going to go into in this episode like how to build a deck. We just want to cover the rules.
Or how to politic at the table, which is another fun thing.
Yeah, we got a bunch of those. Okay, let's talk about the next rule here, which is another rule that is unique to Commander and also is a little more confusing, I think, than most people realize on the surface.
Yes.
It is Commander Damage. This is something, this is a rule in Commander that states if a Commander card, only the card being played as your commander, or the two cards if you have partners, if it deals 21 damage to another player, that player is knocked out of the game at that moment, no matter what else has happened, no matter what their life total. They could be at 1,000 life. If you manage to land that 21 commander damage on them,
yep,
they're out.
This is unique to Commander. This is sort of an alternate win condition. Instead of taking their life to zero, I could do 21 commander damage to Josh. He could still be at 1,000 life, 50 life, 20 life. Doesn't matter. If that commander card is dealt 21 combat damage, then Josh is knocked out. This is specifically only combat damage.
Correct. A lot of people miss that. It has to be dealt through swinging in combat. If a card can do damage in another way, it won't count. It is also tracked according to each individual commander card. So they do not stack up. Let's imagine a scenario. We're in a game. Jimmy, you attack me with your Samet.
Mm-hmm.
I've now taken 6 damage because of double strike. Then let's say the next player, Megan, attacks me with her commander. Let's say it deals 6 damage. I don't have 12 commander damage on me. What I have is 6 damage from Jimmy's commander and 6 damage from Megan's commander. I have to track those two damage totals separately throughout the game. They do not combine.
Yep, and it's actually tied to the physical card itself. So let's say someone
takes
my Samet and steals it and then decides to swing at Josh again, deals another 6 damage. That doesn't mean that 6 damage from me, 6 damage from them. It's actually that in that case because the physical commander card is the one doing it. And they stole that card. Josh now has 12 commander damage total.
Yeah, commander damage is tied to the actual physical card that's on the table. However, that card deals damage is tracked on the same damage tracker. So it even would keep tracking that damage if somehow your card got manifested, your commander, or got flipped over. Yeah, if it got flipped over, even though it's a 2-2 now with Ixodron or something like that, and hit me for another 2, I would have 8 commander damage on me. It would continue to track because it's a this physical card has dealt 8 damage to Josh. Then somebody steals that card, hits me with it. Now I've taken 10 damage if it hasn't been flipped back over. So yeah, people get that kind of confused. They do not stack with multiple commanders, but the same card will stack no matter where it is or what's happened to it.
Yep. You can't make a copy or a clone of that card either, so it's a token copy. That does not count as commander damage if that thing is hitting. It has to be, again, tied to the physical actual card itself.
Yeah, if you clone somebody's commander, you're not dealing commander damage. You're just dealing... Your version is not a commander. It's just a creature.
Yeah, but you can still deal damage with it. Just regular damage.
We can't stress this enough. Remember, it is only combat damage that deals commander damage. Nekusar, which is a card that deals damage to opponents every time they draw a card. When they're drawing a card, that's not combat. So Nekusar is not dealing commander damage in those cases. I'm sorry, that would be broken. That's not how commander damage works. It is only combat damage.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Whew. That was a brainful and a mouthful to discuss all of those super unique rules to Commander. So let's move on to the next topic. We're going to be covering a little bit of the idea of multiplayer, why it's so awesome, and sort of the intricacies to that. So again, Commander very typically is a multiplayer format. Most common we found is 4-player pods, but we've heard of games that get up to 20 people. Don't do that. Down to 3, up to 5s, anywhere in that range. But typically, you're around 4 to 5 players. If you're above 5 players, we'd recommend actually splitting it. So you have 2 pods of 3 as opposed to like a 6-player game, because no one wants to sit down for a 3-hour extravaganza at the end of which everyone goes, well, I got to go home now, but thanks
and
for
you
the
never
single
finish,
game.
Yeah.
Or yeah, and you never even finish the game, or one person gets knocked down, has to sit there for the next 30, 40 hour, 2 hours.
You can try it. 6-player is not the worst, but I think 2-3-player pods is better. Just there's too much time in between. You take your turn and then you literally wait like 45 minutes before it
comes. Yeah, you could go get a drink and go to the bathroom and eat a meal in between sometimes. But don't do that either.
But the multiplayer aspect really does change a lot of things about how the game is Magic is played, and it does affect deck building, and it affects a lot how you play when you're playing the game. So multiplayer just adds a ton of layers that are interesting and unique, and I think to me multiplayer is actually the biggest thing, the biggest reason that Commander is what it is. It's the thing that separates it the most, because deck building restrictions are cool, but every format has certain deck building restrictions. Not every format is multiplayer. Almost every format is 1v1, and that's really the thing that makes Commander stand out.
Yeah, Magic, again, wasn't designed to be a multiplayer game, so the fact that players and fans were able to craft this format out of the game of Magic, and it ends up being way more fun, in our opinion, is sort of what brings so many players, new players and old players alike, to this format as sort of their go-to to enjoy the game in a way that isn't as sweaty, as we sort of say it in the biz.
All right, so some of the reasons that multiplayer is so cool is that it does lessen that hyper-competitive spirit. It does make it more about the social part of the game.
Yeah, there's a ton more variance, and the decision points you have to make are way more varied, because if someone brings a deck to the table you've never seen before, you may be making a decision based on what's happening that you've never even thought before in your entire life.
The social aspect, the table politics, is a really big fun thing about multiplayer. You can sway the decisions of others. You can make deals, alliances. Like I said, a lot of ties to things like Among Us and Werewolf and even tabletop role-playing games, which adds just a totally different aspect than Magic has in any other format.
Yeah, and the longer you play with someone, the more alliances or sort of grudges you might hold. Yeah. And that could totally influence the way a game plays out, you know, much to the chagrin of others or to the enjoyment. You know, there's a lot of fun to be had there. And it really does help you, I think, grow that synergy with a group of friends if you do sort of have that long-term play group. And that can be lead to so many fun moments.
We talked about longer games, and that can be a downside if it goes very, very long. But the fact that like you don't often have very, very short games is, I think, up in the positive column, because it allows a lot of things we've talked about up till now, like being able to play more fringe strategies and some of the crazier, splashier, bigger cards, being able to really set up crazy scenarios. Those are all aspects of longer games, whereas if the shorter the game is, the less chance you have to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you have a big deck and you want to, you know, play a lot more out of that, so the longer the game is, the more cards you're going to get to see. A nice part, again, is that anyone's welcome at the table, right? Even if my deck is slightly less powerful, I'm less experienced than other players, that makes me less of a target sometimes. And so there is a sort of self-policing effect that happens with a lot of Commander and multiplayer games, where if someone, and we all clearly recognize that X person is just going off the rails and we need to deal with them, then we can team up and gather up as a team and go against them, or give ourselves an alliance. Hey, I'm not going to swing at you for a turn if we can deal with that thing. And so that self-policing effect leads to a more fun and fair game oftentimes for players that might be disadvantaged for one reason or another.
Yeah, it really can help bring balance to the table, which is a lot of fun. So let's talk about how multiplayer affects your deck building. So one of the things you want to keep an eye out for are cards that say each opponent rather than target opponent, or each player's upkeep rather than on your upkeep or on target player's upkeep. because there are so many more players, those cards were generally designed and balanced for 1v1 and can be a little bit skewed, i.e. more powerful in Commander, because they're actually referring to, you know, when you have three opponents, that's going to happen a lot more than they thought that when it was only one opponent, right?
Yeah, so cards like Dragon Broodmother, which makes tokens, and it says at the beginning of each upkeep, was probably designed to only happen on your upkeep and your opponent's upkeep, but now with four players, that's going to happen four times every time it goes around the table. Cards like Baleful Force, which it says at the beginning of each upkeep you draw a card, you lose a life. Wirewood Symbiote, you can activate this each turn, so you can sort of use this ability over and over again on each turn instead of just one turn and your opponent's turn back to yours.
Yeah, stuff that says only about use once each turn was supposed to be twice again, but now it's four times, and that's twice as powerful sometimes, right?
Yeah, so with more players, a lot of cards in Magic's history scale more differently and more powerfully as well. So just keep an eye out for those. Those often can be the hidden gems that you pull out of the deck or in the table, and people go, what the heck? I can't believe that does that.
Right, that thing seems broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was designed for two players and we're in four player. Another big thing that will change in your deck building now that you're playing in a multiplayer format over sort of like standard or modern or historic or something like that, is that higher mana value cards, higher CMC cards, are more likely to get cast. So we can generally play more 7, 8, 9 drops than you can. I mean, in standard and like modern legacy, most
sometimes you can, but you're cheating it out, or it's like the goal of your deck is to get that to that specific thing, and it has no room to do anything else.
And most decks don't even play any 7 drops, right? Like, it's very rare. Whereas I'd say most Commander decks have at least a few 7 drops, 8 drops, somewhere in that range, because you will get to the point in the game of being able to cast them. Don't go overboard. You don't have 20 of these cards, but you can have some, and they're going to be fine, even if you're not cheating them into play.
Yeah, you have more life, you have more players, you probably just are going to have more time to set up. And, you know, we talk a lot about the ratios of what to put into your deck in terms of mana ramp and also card draw. And
those episodes will be linked in the show notes.
Because there's a lot more ramp and every single deck is trying to get more mana out of their deck every single turn, you're going to have a higher chance of casting your 5, 6, 7 drops. And, you know, players are expected to in a lot of ways, because you need a higher power level in order to win the game, because you're playing against more people. You know, your regular 2 drop that maybe in an aggro deck could beat someone 1-on-1 is not going to cut it in a 4-player game. You're going to need something that's a 6-mana spell or 7 or whatever it is to have that power level that is necessary to sort of close out the game.
I like what you said there about mana ramp and card draw. In general, these are more important in Commander than they are in other formats. In other formats, you can have decks that don't have any mana ramp, they don't have any card draw. Mm-hmm. In Commander, every single deck needs mana ramp and card draw.
Yep.
Another thing that's different in multiplayer Magic is that instant speed stuff becomes much, much better. You won't be able to answer or destroy all the threats from 3 different players, right? In general, that you won't have the resources, either the mana or the cards in hand, to be able to be like, I kill your thing, your cool thing when you play it, I kill your cool thing when you play it, and I kill your thing when you play it. In 1v1, you can kind of sometimes keep up and do that. This just can't happen because you're so skewed. You've got 3 opponents and there's only one of you. So it becomes much more important to only deal with the stuff that you know is a problem for you specifically. If Jimmy plays a card, even if it's big and scary, it could actually be great for me that he's doing that if his main target in this game is going to be Mel.
Yep.
You know, if she's scary right now and he plays it, I might be like, yes, that thing's awesome. And then I might hold my Swords to Plowshares for later after he's dealt with Mel or something else and be like, yeah, I might have to kill that thing because it's scary, but only when it's
best for me.
Yeah, only when it's going to be pointed at me. I could wait. And he finally goes, okay, Josh, I'm going to attack you with it. Okay, I kill it. Yep. But I don't want to miss out on him attacking Mel with it 1 or 2 times before that happens, right?
Instant speed is great too, because let's say I pass my turn, I'm holding up that removal spell, Josh plays something, I'm like, holy crap, that's so bad, but I can actually wait 2 more turns for 2 other players to go, and if they don't do anything and I have to be the one to remove it, I can do it at the very last moment. A lot of times you'll find that, you know, lesser experienced players might fire off a removal spell too early when someone else could have actually dealt with it, and had they held that card, someone else could have done the job for them. So that instant speed gives you a little more flexibility, which is always nice.
And think about it from an information standpoint. In 1v1, when I pass the turn to Jimmy, the amount of information I don't have is one player's turn worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's going to do his things, then it's going to come back to me. In multiplayer Magic, I pass the turn, and I don't have information about Jimmy's turn yet. And then once his turn's done, I don't have information about the other two players' turn yet. And once the next player's turn, like, the information gap is so large once I pass the turn. And instant speed is like recon. It allows you to kind of wait and see what happens and act when you have more information.
Yeah, sometimes you'll actually use it on something else entirely different because it happened two turns later and you realize that's the real threat.
Right.
Another card that we didn't mention yet is stuff like board wipes. Because, again, board wipes are like cards that get rid of every creature on the board. They're going to be better when you have more players because they're going to have more cards on the table. Your card is just going to get more value. So a card like Toxic Deluge, one of our favorite board wipes in the format, is so good because you, one, have the extra life to pay for it, but also when you use it, instead of just maybe removing 2-3 cards, sometimes you're going to remove 8 to 12 cards, and that kind of value is the kind of thing that can swing a game in your favor.
And the last thing we're going to talk about here about the difference in deck building and sort of strategy when you're doing multiplayer is there are some archetypes, some types of decks, they're just kind of inherently weaker in multiplayer.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see as many pure aggro decks running around in Commander because aggro strategies are usually balanced for 1v1. They can't make a one mana 4-4, right? Like, it would have to have a huge downside, and the Vexing Devil is that, right? and that's just not something that would make sense because in 1v1, that would just totally skew the balance. So they can't. It's hard for them to design those cards. However, like a 2-mana 2-2, which is a pretty good, you know, decent aggro card in like Limited or something, just not good enough in Commander because I have to knock out 3 other players and they all have double life totals. So it's like having to knock out 6 players.
Yeah.
If that's the equivalent in 1v1. And usually you're playing the game of like, I'm going to kill you before your card advantage or your crazy combo sets up. But because in Commander, maybe I take out Jimmy, maybe I take out another player, but by the time I'm ready for the third player, they're now set up.
Yeah, or someone plays a board wipe that you weren't expecting, and there goes your entire strategy, and they're just getting started.
Yep. So, also mill. Mill is another strategy that's just tougher in, not impossible. And again, aggro is not impossible, but you'll see less of it in multiplayer and Commander.
Yeah, generally because, again, you're playing against more people, more life. The cards that you're playing each need to have just sort of a higher bar to sort of set the table and be able to exist at the table and work. And so you'll find that cards with a lot more synergies or inherent sort of like strengths with other cards in your deck are going to be better than just your regular, oh, this is a big power creature for low mana.
All right, let's talk about the social aspect, the table politics. This is another aspect of multiplayer. And again, I think this is sort of the primary thing that makes Commander what it is. Typically in 1v1 formats, there's not a ton of discussion between the players. I mean, you announce your game moves, maybe ask a rules question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I move to this phase of the turn. You communicate those things. But this thing never happens in 1v1 where you play a creature and I go, please don't attack me with that.
Yeah, be like, no, that's not how it works. I don't have any choice. Yeah, like, that's literally, why would I not? It would actually be making a mistake.
Yeah, who else is there to attack? Like, if I'm not going to attack you with it, why would I play the creature?
Yep.
Yeah, but in multiplayer, it totally is realistic for you to be like, hey, Jimmy, can you not attack me with that creature? And him to be like, well,
yeah, sure, but you owe me something down the line. Or like, hey, look, how about you use that Howling Mine in your hand right now because I want to draw those cards sooner rather than later.
Yeah, you can make deals. You can make alliances. You can negotiate with people. You can discuss what they're going to do and try and get information. You can team up, deflect, convince, connive. Basically, you can talk to people.
And talking to people is really fun. Some players go all in on this and love to do this politicking aspect of it. Other players shy away from it. And that's, again, totally fine and up to you and your play group. You don't have to make deals with other players. But that is what lends to the big fun part of the social aspect of this, is that you never know what's going to change the outcome of a game. Sometimes a player will do something that is inherently just like, that wasn't very fun or nice. You know what? Let's team up on them. Or like, you know what? I like that. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt this time or whatever it is. Those little elements are not printed on cards, they're not in the rules, but they make the game that much more interesting.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts about the whole format. It's just, you know, the discussion, the little games you play to try and be like, oh man, if I can get him to just not attack me for one turn, then I could do this thing.
I actually don't have anything. Oh, look at how bad my board state is. But in your head, you're like, they have no idea. Yeah. They have no idea how good it's going to be.
Just don't see it. Yeah. That's one of the most fun things about the format. We have tons of episodes that are basically tips and tricks on, you know, politics at the table, how to negotiate, how to get, you know, be manipulative or whatever, and pull one over on people. We're not going to dive deeply into that in this episode, but those links will be in the show notes to those episodes.
Yeah, and something Josh always talks about is that in the game itself, it's not like a you can do whatever you want, but it is a game. And at that point, anything goes in terms of the deals and stuff you're making. Don't take that energy outside of the game and carry your grudges or anger outside of it. When you're in the world of Commander and you're sitting down at the table, you're sort of entering into a new arena where these sorts of politicking and these rules happen, and it's okay for them to happen. So that's another fun part of it, is being able to divorce that part of the game from the rest of the world.
All right, let's talk about the next talking point, which is a competitive spectrum. So Commander is one of the only ways to play where people will actually do suboptimal things, like, on purpose, for fun.
Yeah.
But like any Magic format or game in general, there's the capability to run into all types of players, right? You can find extremely competitive people playing Commander, all the way down to people that are so casual, they're literally not trying to win ever. And the vast majority of people are not looking for the, you know, the most highly tuned decks trying to win as fast as possible experience, but some are. And that's okay. I think the important thing is to make sure that before you play, when you sit down, you're setting the expectations. You're having a discussion, you know, while you're shuffling up, getting on the same page, finding out what everybody in the game wants as far as what they want to get from the experience.
And what decks are they bringing to the table? Because let's say you have a finely tuned deck, what's like bringing an F1 to a go-kart race?
Right.
It's like, that's not going to be fun for anyone. You're obviously going to smoke them all, but they just wanted to putt-putt around with the go-kart and have fun and banter and throw, I don't know, bananas at each other or whatever. Like, it's Mario Kart.
Shells, yeah.
Yeah. So talking through the power level of the deck is really important to understand. If you're sitting down, everyone goes, hey, I'm looking for a competitive experience. But like, okay, cool. You know what? Actually, I don't have any of those kinds of decks on me, but I can find another play group over there. Or you go, you know what? I want to see if I can keep up with that pace. Or everyone goes, hey, you know, we were just trying to have some fun. We have some pre-cons. We're trying to play really casually. This is their first time playing. This is their second week in the game. Oh, fun. That's exactly the kind of area that I want to be in. So just make sure that when you're sitting down, it's incumbent on you and also the other players to make sure that's expressed. So at the end of the day, everyone walks away from the table with at least knowing that, like, hey, I knew what I was getting into, and I had fun because of that.
Yeah, I'd say most of the time, even though you start maybe on different levels of what you want, you'll come to a position of compromise. Somebody might say, well, I've got this really competitive deck, and I'd like to play it. And you might not have a CEDH deck on you, but you might be like, okay, I'll just play my best deck.
Yeah.
And I know your deck's probably going to smash mine, but this will be a fun challenge. And going in, you just already know that. And when they do stuff that normally you might find mean or too competitive, it might be okay because you knew that going in. And then the next game, you go, okay, we played your competitive deck. Can we play something lower power level? They're going to be more likely to be like, yeah, I got this deck over here, because, you know, everyone's allowing each other to have fun. And I think that's kind of the big thing, is just have those discussions.
Yeah, and try not to be too negative or react too harshly if something doesn't go exactly the way that was discussed beforehand. It takes so much time and effort to like fully find that calibration. And no matter what, at the end of the day, your power level 7 might be a power level 10 to someone else. And you don't actually necessarily know that going into the game, but it takes a little bit of calibration and stuff. But once you get that balance set, once you figure out the players that you love to play with and the play groups, or just understand how to sort of have that talk before each game, you're going to find yourself having a lot more fun. But it takes time and effort to cultivate that.
Yeah, I'd say give people a break, give them the benefit of the doubt. If you have the discussion, it doesn't like lead to the most perfect Commander game ever. A lot of times it's like, okay, our calibration was a little off, let's try again here.
Yeah,
you know, give them the benefit of the doubt, give them a break. And most people I find are not like bad actors. They are trying to like let everybody, they want the same thing that you want, as far as like they want to come to an understanding and have everybody have an experience where they walk away from it saying like, that was fun.
Yeah. And over time, as you play more Commander, you might build more decks to sort of fill that spectrum from hyper casual to hyper competitive, so that when you sit down at the table, you're always going to have the right deck to play when it comes to it.
Yeah, you'll have choices, you'll have options. It does take a long time to cultivate a really good play group. So, you know, it's something that takes time and effort as well. All right. We're getting near the end here. We're going to talk about why we play Commander, what we love about it.
I love your answer.
So for me, I love Commander because of the gathering, the yucks.
The yucks.
Yeah.
What a great word.
The laughter. That's the one thing that I always think about when I think of Commander, is just everybody kind of laughing at whatever it is. Yeah.
That's a common noise you hear, like, oh!
I love that. A lot of times we play and there's a number of Commander pods going on, and you just hear that from the other side of the room. The, oh! And everybody laughing. And it's just like, that's what Commander is to me. Just, those noises. So it's mostly just the hanging with friends. I love the cards and I love, like, doing cool things. But at the same time, like, the most fun part of it for me is just like hanging out with your friends.
Yeah, I think the community aspect is definitely what I love the most, because before we played Commander, I used to play board games with my friends all the time, and those were always fun, but having to sit down, and sometimes you would learn three board games a night, and you'd have to spend a significant amount of time just sitting there reading the rule book, or someone, it would always be their position to sit there and explain the game to everyone. So Commander provided an experience where everyone already knew the game, already was ready to play this world, but it felt like every single table you sat at could be a different board game in and of itself. So having that, the crazy moments, the O's and the ahs, I also really like building around themes or doing things that are just like fun and interesting to me, because for me, like, the politicking is fun, but I love the self-expression and also just like sometimes adding that chaos. I'm someone that constantly plays suboptimally just to see what happens. And I think also having played for so long now, I'm not in it to just try and win every time, because, you know, you're playing with four different people. There's a good chance you're not coming out on top in that game. So why not have more fun in the meantime?
Yeah, and you don't remember exactly how many games you've won or lost of Commander ever, right? Yeah. So, but you will remember, like, this one time I played this card and this happened.
Oh, yeah. I can still recall with crystal pinpoint precision some moments where people like Craig did things to me that I'll never forget.
Yeah. Specifically the time, Craig. It's always Craig.
Or I'll be reminded by the internet about a certain time I made a play that was totally bad. But it was, you know what? Totally memorable. And that, to me, is more important than the winning part of it.
All right, let's end this discussion with some common questions, stuff that people frequently ask, just to kind of help everybody with the little stuff that got nagging at them as we've been talking. So the first question is, what is EDH?
Oh, yes. Well, EDH is Commander, and Commander is EDH, but we most often refer to the game now as Commander. So Commander was originally created by judges and fans of the game to pass time during rounds at Magic tournaments way back in the day, and it was called EDH because it stood for Elder Dragon Highlander.
Yeah, so the Elder Dragon is the legendary creature, so that's become the Commander.
Yep.
And Highlander is another word for singleton, because there can be only one.
Yes.
Is the quote from the, there can be only one.
And we turned it into,
I am the last one.
I am the last one.
Henry Jones Jr. Wait, that's a set. The different movie. Different movie. Shaken, not stirred.
Whoa.
Going all over.
Turns out there can be a lot of 007s, actually.
So that's why Elder Dragon Highlander. But when Wizards sort of officially started supporting the format and creating product for it, it got renamed to Commander.
Yeah.
Because Elder Dragon Highlander, let's be honest, like, to most people, that's just gobbledygook and doesn't mean anything. And also, it has a reference to another IP in it, so they renamed it to Commander. But you'll hear people refer to it as EDH. It's the same thing.
And the original Elder Dragons were also technically the only creatures you could play as your Commander, which is fun. So like the Nicol Bolas or whatever, you would have all five of them, but those were the only creatures you could use. That has obviously changed in the same way that games like League of Legends call them champions.
Yeah.
We call them Commanders.
Yep. All right. The next frequently asked question is, can I play Commander online, like on Arena?
No, you cannot play it on Arena, nor should you expect to play it on Arena. Arena is built to be a 1v1 format. Magic the Gathering Online, which is the legacy client for Magic, has Commander, but it's not ideal. We don't recommend it. There's a lot of feel bads when it comes to that client. If you click OK at the wrong time, you may lose your chance to win the game because you pass priority. And typically in Commander games, if someone makes a mistake or goes like, oh, wait, hold on, can I actually do this first? Players will be like, yeah, no worries.
Because it's super complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. Magic Online does not give you that freedom.
Plus, it's hard to socially interact over Magic Online. There's just not a good way to like chat with everybody.
No politicking. It becomes a lot more optimal playing.
You can play on there, but very few people do because it's not really the same.
Yeah.
The best way to play online is actually through Spell Table. And this is what would you call it? Like a platform that was created to work with like webcams.
It's the Zoom call of Commander.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So you just need a camera that's pointed down at your board. And then Spell Table actually has card recognition software built in so that you can see the other player's boards because they have a camera pointed down at it. And you can actually click on their cards and the card recognition will actually bring it up on screen for you so that you can tell, you know, what cards you don't know are, which is a game changer for Commander. Because again, like we said, we've played this game and talked about it more than anybody, and we still have cards every single game that we don't remember what they specifically say. We just kind of, I generally know what that does, but I need the specific wording. Or even cards get played from like new sets, Strixhaven, and I'm like, I just talked about that in a set review, but I don't actually remember exactly what it does. So Spell Table allows you to kind of look at cards and see everybody's board states.
Yeah, so if you have some friends in another state, or even you just don't want to go over, you can play over Spell Table. You can also Google Spell Table Discord, and Discord is like an online chat room with servers, and you'll find tons of different places where people gather for games, or say like, hey, I'm looking to play a game, I have a power level 6 deck, who wants to go play? And then you'll sort of send over the Spell Table link, and everyone can join up that way. So it's a really great way to play remotely and digitally.
Yeah, been great through the pandemic. Some quick notes. You want to avoid cards when you're playing over Spell Table that, like, look at other players' decks or hands. It can be difficult to do things like steal your opponent's creatures, because obviously you're not in the same space with them, so you can't, like, reach over and just be like, hey, can I grab that and put it onto my battlefield? Not that you totally can't do it. Some people use those cards that with dry erase markers on them. But just be aware of that. There are certain decks that don't function as well in that environment.
Yeah. Oh, does that mean no opposition agent?
I mean, I'd say no opposition agent. No, normally, no, I guess technically you can do it, but it'd be real hard, right? You got to look through their whole deck.
Yeah, and then everyone has to close their eyes because the only way they show you their deck is, yeah. So just avoid those cards in general. Spell Table is still a great way to get Commander games in, just without that specific kind of interaction.
All right, the next question is, what's the difference between Commander and Brawl?
Ah, so there are a lot of similarities, but Brawl was invented to be a 60-card format that rotated. So that meant that cards that you have today are not going to be legal in the format after certain sets come out. So Brawl is also primarily 1v1, and it's played on Arena. It's got similar deck building restrictions like Singleton and all that stuff, but they're not the same.
Yeah, some people do play it in paper multiplayer, but not many. Again, Google's your best friend here for figuring out, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
All right, what about the ban list and other rules that we refer to here, Jimmy?
Yeah, so Commander can be extremely complex. I'm sure some of your heads are spinning after everything we've talked about in this episode. But you can find out a lot more about, for instance, the core philosophies of Commander from the creators themselves, what they call Rule Zero as well, and the ban list if you go to mtgcommander.net. Again, that'll be linked in the show notes below. Something to note, though, Commander as a format is not run by Wizards of the Coast. Now, Wizards does make a lot of cards for it and releases products specific to Commander, but the format itself is regulated outside of that.
Yeah, there's something called the Commander Rules Committee, and these are four individuals. Like Jimmy said, a lot of them are ex-judges, very high-level judges, who basically created and then shepherded this format and popularized it and things like that. Now, there are some members of the Rules Committee who are currently Wizards of the Coast employees, at least one, or have been in the past. At least a couple have been called in to help with card design and things like that. But that's not, being on the Rules Committee is not tied to their job at Wizards.
Yeah.
And so they don't function officially as Wizards people on the Rules Committee, even though Wizards does have some ties to it.
Yeah.
It's a really unique situation. I think it's the only format that functions in this way, but it is really community and player created.
Yep. And also something that will come up quite a lot rules-wise is you'll have an old card and the text on it will be all wonky. It's formatted weird. It says weird things. Always just go online, and there are a lot of apps that will do this as well, and you can look up the actual, what they call the oracle text of the card on gatherer.wizards.com, and you can just look up what it actually should say if it was templated in 2021 as opposed to in 93 when it was written. Some cards would just have gobbledygook written all over
sometimes
it.
Sometimes you're like, why did they think saying that was okay? It's just like a random words that are just put on the card.
Yeah.
All right, the next question is, where should I go to play first?
Ah, this is a great question, especially right now as everyone's sort of coming out of the pandemic slowly. I would say your local game store is one of the best places to go. Not only are you supporting your local game store and you're providing people to go there to participate in events and all that stuff, but this is where other like-minded individuals, especially players of Magic and people that play Commander, are going to be gathering and looking for other people to play with.
Yep. There's also hopefully soon, again, pandemic willing, going to be live in-person events, Magic Fest, Command Fest. Hopefully those are going to be returning soon. Spell Table is a great way to play, and also to meet people online, to form playgroups online. And then just anyone you know who plays Magic is liable to be a good candidate to start a Commander playgroup with. So this could be somebody at your school, at your church, and a club that you're part of, or any social circles. At your work, we know a lot of people who sort of find out somebody else at work. This is how this whole podcast started.
Oh, yeah.
We met each other at work, and you know, I saw Sarah Angel, I think, on Jimmy's desk, and that's all it took was for us to begin. You play Magic? And before you know it, you know, 7 years later, you got 400 episodes of a podcast.
That's how it happens for everyone.
Yeah, bada bing, bada boom.
Easy as that.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. A couple of things here and there, and bam, that was easy as that. No, a lot of players, too, will have game nights at their houses. Sometimes board game groups will also have Magic players within them. So if those sorts of activities are happening, or maybe you want to play with just your family. You know, I know a lot of great families that just buy 4 pre-cons, and that's it. That's the extent of their building their decks, and they have, I would say, just as much fun, if not more fun, than a lot of play groups out there. So don't be afraid of those restrictions as well. Everyone has to start somewhere.
And you need a number of players to play Commander. It's different than if I'm just playing Limited or 1v1 or Standard, I really only need one other person to play. Commander, you need at least two, but you'd ideally want 3 or 4. And so playgroups are often looking for extra members. So if you find out somebody plays Magic and or Commander, don't be shy. Just be like, hey, I would like to play. I'm learning, you know, can I play with you? A lot of times they will want you to come because that's another person that can be in their playgroup and allows them to play more often.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, Commander is probably not the best way to learn how to play Magic itself. Definitely learn to play Magic
on Arena.
Yeah. Or just having a friend teach you and then dip your toes into water. You don't want to dive into the deep end immediately and not know how to swim.
You need to know how attacking, blocking works, how to cast your spells, what the phases are, how the stack works. Arena has tutorials that are literally designed to teach you that stuff. Learn on Arena. The rules are all the same in paper, and then you can move into Commander. That's a great path to take, and it won't take you very long.
Yeah, and okay. It's fun. You get to play Magic.
All right. And then how do I learn more, Jimmy?
Well, watch episodes like this. Obviously, if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel called The Command Zone Podcast, what are you doing? Click the subscribe button. You can hit the notification bell. We are one of many YouTube channels and podcasts and shows out there that talk about Magic and specifically Commander as well. That scene has just blown up. We have game nights as well. It's a great way to just understand, here's a way that people play around the table. We do a lot of demonstrations of how the stack works during more crazy rules interactions. But there are other gameplay shows out there too, so you can understand, you know, there's a whole breadth in terms of how people play, why they play, their styles, their play groups, their humor, and all that stuff.
Yeah, our web series Game Nights, that is Nights with a K, is a really good way to sort of see Commander games in action, and we take a lot of care to make sure that everything's very clear as far as what's going on. So It really is ideal. If you understand Magic at all, you'll be able to watch Game Nights and follow it. We even hear from people who don't even play Magic who are able to watch Game Nights just because we do a good job of explaining sort of every step of the way. So I'd say if you want to learn more, that's a good place to start. But like Jimmy said, there are so much Commander content out there now. If you just go on YouTube or on your favorite podcast app, you're going to find a lot of stuff. Yeah. And it's really all helpful.
And if you like our style, then if you just add the words Command Zone to the end of your Google search, if you look up Strategy Command Zone, you'll probably find a podcast episode that we've done talking about that very specific thing.
Yeah, and we're going to have a ton of links in the show notes for this episode. So click on that more info box below the video, you know, and go down there. And I'm going to put a bunch of like episodes that are good for beginning players in there so that you can kind of follow through and hopefully get a good look at what the format looks like.
Yeah, and feel free to ask us questions. Josh and I are really active on Twitter, as well as we have a Discord for our patrons. You can also send us an email. You can talk to us on Instagram.
Comment
below on this video. Yeah, there's tons of places. And also you'll find that Commander players are really helpful. We all just want people to play the game with us. So if you ask a comment, there's a good chance we'll get responded to, or you can send it to another content creator out there. Lots of helpful voices. Just ask us the question.
In fact, if you are going to comment below this video, we have some specific questions that we would like you to answer. One is, what questions about Commander do you still have that we didn't answer in this episode? We'll be really looking through the comments, because if there's some stuff that we didn't cover that a lot of people are asking about, we'll be able to make another video or more content about it to really answer those questions that we didn't answer this time. And if you're an established Commander player, you know, maybe put some good advice you have in the comments below this video for those that are just starting out, especially if it's advice that we didn't cover in this episode, or little tips and tricks you've learned from teaching people or bringing people into the Commander family.
Yep. And if you want to get started playing Commander, well, the first thing you have to do is get some cards. Fortunately, we have just the link for you. If you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, that is our affiliate link. That's where you can pick up Commander singles, sealed product like the new precons that are always coming out. Modern Horizons 2 is right on the horizon for us right now, and that's going to have tons of powerful cards for Commander as well. One of the most exciting parts about Commander is getting new cards, putting them into your deck, and empowering all that stuff up. So make sure you just use that affiliate link, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. /command zone. And when you're there, you can pick up whatever you need and you can build your deck and get on your merry way.
Yeah, nothing else happens. You just order the cards you were going to order no matter what, but simultaneously you get to support content like this. And then when you get the cards, you want to keep them safe. You don't want them to get messed up. We know that Magic cards are valuable. We want to keep them in pristine condition. The best way to do that is with Ultra Pro products. They really are the company that Jimmy and I trust our own collections to. I have all of my 20-something decks, I think it's 27 or 28 now, in Eclipse sleeves, Pro Glossy Eclipse sleeves, I think are the best ones.
I need
ones.
To start switching over.
Yeah, I switched over most of my like main decks that are in the main rotation.
Yeah.
I still have a few that are in the old Eclipse sleeves, which are still good. And it's like, I feel bad switching them out of those old sleeves because the sleeves haven't broken, even though I've had them for like three or four years. But
Put them into a new deck.
Yeah. But Ultra Pro really does make the stuff to protect your stuff. You want to use their playmats, deck boxes to really keep all your cards safe, because if you travel with them or something like that, you don't want them to get bent or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
hopefully you'll be doing a lot more traveling soon, and we'll be able to meet you at a Command Fest sometime and get a game in. That's going to be a blast.
That is exciting. I hope that's coming soon. And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. There's all kinds of perks for patrons. They get to watch episodes of Game Nights and Extra Turns earlier than the general public. In fact, if you're watching this right when it came out, we have a really special episode of Game Nights. It's coming out this week.
Ooh.
We have a huge guest. Post Malone is at the table playing Commander with us, one of his own decks that he brewed. It's really, really exciting. It's a really fun game. You'd get to watch that earlier than the general public if you just sign up for our Patreon.
Yeah, you definitely want to find out what happens in that game. And also, Post Malone, he's a good player. Turns out he learned a lot of how to play from us.
Yep. And he used it against us.
Yep, he definitely did. So you want to check that out, go to patreon.com/commandzone.
All right. Big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, and we've got a new guy who just started. He's a writer-producer. His name is Dan Sheehan. Dan's been doing great work already on some of our ads. Also, I wanted to give Dan a shout because Dan just had a book release.
Pretty cool. I saw this downstairs and was like, wait a minute, I recognize the name on this.
Yeah, so Dan wrote a book called I Am Not a Wolf. Dan runs a Twitter account called Sick of Wolves, and so the wolf thing is very near and dear to Dan's heart, something he's been going on about for a number of years here. Mm-hmm. So the book is called I Am Not a Wolf. It's like a choose your own adventure, but it's a comedy book. It's very funny.
Yeah.
In fact, if you follow us on Twitter, we're probably going to have some sort of giveaway soon because we have Dan in house and I bought a number of the books that to have him sign. So we're going to give away a bunch of Dan's book. If you want to get your hands on that, just make sure.
When's the last time you read a choose your own adventure book?
As I was reading it, I was like, it's been a long time and these are actually really fun and Dan did a great job.
Yeah.
So yeah, go to @CommandCast, follow us on Twitter, and we'll be giving away this book at some point in the near future. So
signed
you can get your
copies.
Signed copies, yeah.
All right. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, as always. He does a lot of the Living Card animations that start the show, and also some of his live behind us here on set. You can find him on Twitter @LivingCardsMTG.
All right, everybody. Hopefully now you know how to play Commander.
Yeah, send this to all your friends that are looking to get into the game. It's a great place to start, and I can't wait to see you all around the table very soon. Hopefully beating us with our own tips and tricks.
Beating
us? Challenging us.
I like that. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.